Yeah. Right. So the only question was, what should you do now? You open up the fridge, the fridge light is on. What do you do now? So there are two schools of thought, the mainstream and what I was taught. And I'll tell you, the mainstream opinion is that you cannot close the refrigerator. The light is on. When you close the refrigerator, the light's going to shut off. And therefore, you can't close it. And same thing, if you realize you left it on, you can't even open the fridge. Because now you opening the fridge, you're going to be turning on the light. So that's the mainstream opinion. And therefore, it's recommended, according to them, to get a guy to come and open and close it for you if he's at your service all the time, or for him to unscrew the light. And you can't tell him outright. You would hint it to him. So that's the mainstream opinion, that you cannot open or close it. You can only have the guy open and close it for you. However, having a child do it for you is better than you doing it yourself, perhaps. The problem is that you are perhaps teaching your child that they are a Shabbos guy, and they may get too accustomed to doing that. And when they grow up, they will continue to be your Shabbos guy. And therefore, it's probably not the best idea to have a child or a Jewish person do it for you to be your Shabbos guy. But that's the mainstream opinion. However, there is, my Rebbeim hold, a different logic that would allow you to do it yourself. And the reason is, there's a concept which maybe we'll learn in Hilchos Shabbos of, it's called Psik Reishei D'lo Nichalei, or Einu Mischavin, where you don't care about it, you don't want it to happen, the consequences are inconsequential, and it's something which you don't need or care about. In which case, you, therefore, when you open or close the refrigerator, that light that's going on, you don't need that light. You have electricity in your house, you can see the food fine, there's no need for you to have that light on. And therefore, there would be no problem for you to open or close it. The best would be, therefore, just do it with a shinoi. A shinoi is not a heter for everything, but in this case where you have a machlokes, yes, no, is it okay or not okay, the best would be to open it with the elbow, close it with the elbow, and that would probably be the best idea. Okay, that was as far as Yoni's question. Someone else on the Israeli shir sent in about he sold a chair to somebody, and that person paid half of it in cash already, and he's going to pay the other half tomorrow. So the question was, can he sit on it in the meantime? So on Monday, the new owner, the purchaser, paid half, and the next day, the purchaser will come back and pay for the other half. So in the meantime, can the seller sit on that chair? That's what he asked me yesterday. So it is a big machlokes how kinyan kesef works. But this, what was happening over here is this chair was bought and sold with kinyan kesef. So the question is, when does kinyan kesef take hold? When is the chal? When is it completed, the kinyan? Is it with the first initial down payment, the first penny, or only with completion? If there is a machlokes about it in Chayish and Mishpat, and it may depend a lot on how it was spoken out. What is spoken out? That, okay, it's my chair now, and I owe you the rest of the money, like a loan? Or no, it's, I'm in the middle of my kinyan. My kinyan takes some time. I'm doing half my kinyan today, and my kinyan will not be completed until tomorrow. So there are two ways to look at this kinyan. So Shui, because you are my stenographer, and you just came in now, question one was, the light on in the refrigerator? The answer is, do it with the shinoi. Question two is, this chair that was bought and paid for in half, so it would be a machlokas, how kinyan kesef works, and it may depend on how it was spoken out. And therefore, what I recommended to this guy to do was call up the purchaser and ask him for permission to sit on the chair in the next 24 hours, because we don't know how he spoke it out. We don't know what the das was. And therefore, when he pays for half of the chair, he may be the full owner of the chair, and the rest may just be a loan. And therefore, he did call up, he did get permission, and he is sitting on the chair right now, maybe. So that is question number two of how does Kidding Kesef work? In general, you pay for everything in two parts, a down payment. So this is a big shayla, and it will depend on how you word your kinyan. All right, that was shayla number two. I'll just do one more shayla that was sent in also from the Israeli side, which was which was about showering on Shabbos. In the Yom Tov Shiurim, we spoke about it. Yom Tov is a lot more lenient when it comes to showering. Showering on Shabbos is something which, if it is hot water, you definitely cannot shower, even limb by limb. If it is cold water, then there is a machlokas about showering. Normally, it comes down to Svardim saying yes, Ashkenazim saying no, if it's cold water. So a hot water shower is definitely not permitted. Cold water shower is a machlokas, Ashkenazi Svardi. So I see the crowd here is partially Svardi. So you definitely can enjoy yourselves on Shabbos and have a cold shower. Just you have to be careful with schita, not to wring out the towel or hair. And that is as far as the shower. As far as washing your face, your feet, or your hands, that is something which is permitted for sure with cold or warm water. If it's hot water that was heated up Erev Shabbos, then it's also permitted to wash your hands, face, and feet with hot water that was heated up Erev Shabbos. Okay, that is part one. Any questions on part one? Yeah, I'll take new questions, Benji, anytime, sent in before the share. Any questions on what we discussed right now? Otherwise, I'll move on to the
next part. Rabbi, right. what's better to do with a shino
or to make
the 2-year-old do it?
What?
What's better, to do it with a shinoi the light or to like make a 3-year-old do it?
Good question. All right, so Binam is asking, in the refrigerator case, we said that it is okay to do it yourself. Others are machmer completely, but okay to do it yourself, meaning to open or close the refrigerator even though the light is on. So he's asking, in that case, even though we don't necessarily want our children to be our Shabbos guys, if it's you doing with a shinoi, or a child doing it, which is better, I'm not sure. If it's a child doing it, I would definitely tell the child, I could do it also. I mean, I wouldn't let the child think that he's your Shabbos guy, because he's not, and he shouldn't be. So I'm not sure if it's better you with a shinoi or a child, but at the end of the day, you're gonna be responsible for your child also. If someone else's child, that's a good question. Maybe have someone else's child do it for you. But I personally am not a big fan of child labor. And therefore, I would do it myself with a shinoi, probably. All right. Now, let's move on to Hilchos Shabbos. So I want to do now, I was requested to do Hilchos Bishul, which is definitely one of the more complicated and longer topics in Shabbos. What I want to do, I don't plan on doing every detail and every possible scenario in Hilchos Shabbos. What I would like to do is divide it over 3 weeks. The next 3 weeks, do Hilchos Shabbos. Week one being now to give the general terms and concepts and isurim that are involved without adding any meat onto it. We'll draw the skeleton. Next week, put some meat on it to explain what is mutter, what is aser. And then week three to give practical scenarios and applying all of what we've learned. So as far as tonight goes, should we get your pen and paper? And here's the way this goes. We have Hilchos Shabbos, as far as we're going to look it up, it's in Simen Shin Yud Ches, Simen Reish Nun Zayin, Simen Reish Nun Gimel. Reish Nun Gimel talks about putting the food on before Shabbos and sometimes on Shabbos. Reish Nun Zayin talks about Hatmana, and Shin Yud Ches talks about the actual bishul. So these are the three simanim that we'll be discussing. Now, here's the way this goes. As far as Hilchos Bishul, there are two deraisas that we'll be dealing with, right? We are well aware there are 39 malachas, right? Lamentas malachas. Two of them come up when we're actually in the heating process. That's what Bishul is. When we're talking about Bishul, we're talking about the warming process, warming it up, keeping it warm. In the warming process, we're dealing with two of the 39 of the Lamentas malachas, one of them being Mavir, which is kindling a fire. And the other one is Bishul. The malacha is Ofe, cooking, baking, there's no difference. Both of them are under the umbrella of Ofe, That is one of the lama tesis halachas. Okay, so we have two deraisas that we're dealing with. Okay, and the other ones we have derabana. Everything else is derabana. So I'm going to split up. There are five categories. Okay, five categories. Category number one is bishul. Bishul means you're taking something which is not cooked or not fully cooked, and through a source of heat, making it cooked or fully cooked. Now, there are four different types of heat sources. We'll talk about, the only one that's mutter is sun. If you want to fry an egg on Shabbos, so go ahead and put your egg out in the sun, that's okay. Sun is not usher to cook in. But any other heat source, it is usher to cook on. What's considered a heat source? It has to be hot enough to recoil your hand, yatza lettuce bone, which is somewhere between 110 degrees to 180 degrees. If it's that heat, that's a heat which could cook. So for topic one, bishul. Bishul is cooking something or cooking something that was not cooked, bring it through heat to a level of cookedness. Now, we're going to use the term Michael Ben Drusai. Michael Ben Drusai was a thief who would eat on the run. We paskin that anything which is a third cooked has now become edible, but it's not fully cooked. And therefore, if you bring any food to the level of Michael Ben Drusai, what you have just done is brought something to now the cooked status. And therefore, you've done an Aveira, Chil Shabbos, Chai Misa, and a carbon, and a goat, and money. So that is something which you're not allowed to do through any heat source. That's bishul. Even if it is already Michael Ben Drusai, and you cook it more and more and more, that's also the Isser Dereis of bishul. Okay, so part one of five in the warming up process is what's called bishul. Every shy that we're going to be discussing, the first thing we're going to have to ask ourselves is, are you doing bishul d'araisa? Part of that is, are you kindling a fire? That's one malacha. Striking a match, lighting a fire, that's mavir. And also the warming up, the actual cooking of the food. Okay, so that's part one, the issa d'araisa part. Then there are four other parts. Part two is called hatmana, insulating. You're not allowed to insulate food on Shabbos. And even before Shabbos, there are some insulations which are usher to do. Insulating means you're covering something completely to retain the heat, or maybe even in some cases add on to the heat. That's something which is usher. Now we'll find out there are certain scenarios where it's mutter to do before Shabbos. But hatmana is an isser. Now, that why is hatmana usher? Because you may come to kindle flame. You may come to stroke the heat. Or you may be completely doing a big aver bishul if you're doing hatmana with heat on something which is not fully cooked. Okay, so that's area number two. So area number one are the issa d'oraisa of cooking or kindling a flame through heat. Number two is hatmana. Number three is now in the warming up process or coming into Shabbos, something called shahia. Shahia is literally means delaying, pausing, leaving on. Shahia is leaving food on from before Shabbos into Shabbos. Not always are you allowed to leave the food on from before Shabbos coming into Shabbos. The reason for that is you may come to kindle the flame. You may come to stroke the coals. You may come to raise the temperature. And therefore, Shahia is Aser in general because you may do that. And the only way Shahia will become Mutter is if you do some preventative actions that will keep you from kindling the fire. That's where the Blech comes in. The Blech, more detail next time, but the Blech is covering the coals. It's showing you and showing yourself that you're not interested in kindling right now. And therefore, you're not going to come to kindle. Or stroke the flames. Okay, so that's Shahia. Now, the first cousin of Shahia is called Chazara. What's Chazara? Chazara is where it was on the flame before Shabbos. And now you took it off and you want to put it back. So there are some cases that's Mutter, there are some cases that's Aser. That's Chazara. So I just want to familiarize with the terms, okay? So we have Shahia is the leaving the food on the flame coming into Shabbos. Then we have Chazara, which is, it was already on, and now you're taking it off, and you want to put it back on. we are more lenient in the Shehiyah world than we are in the Chazara world. And the fifth one, and we'll put some more meat on all these soon, the fifth one is called Nesina Lechachila. Nesina Lechachila is something which was not on the fire at all coming into Shabbos, and you want to initially, for the first time, put it on. So these are our five terms. Bishul, Hatmana, Shehiyah, Chazara, Nesina Lechachila. Bishul, you're playing with fire, which means you are doing a deraisa, perhaps, of taking something which is not cooked, making it cooked. Hatmana is insulating something before Shabbos or on Shabbos, not always mutter. Number two is Shehiyah. Shehiyah, leaving on food coming into Shabbos. And then number four, Chazara, it was on the fire, you took it off to eat something, and then you want to put it back on. That's Chazara. And number five is Nesina Lechachila, putting on initially. Okay, so now, loosely, just to understand each of them. Bishul, as we spoke out, through heat, anything that is not fully cooked, you cannot make it cooked. We're going to see. Some things which are already cooked, you're allowed to reheat, because that's not cooking, that's reheating. That's by a solid, by a liquid, not so pasha, by a liquid, even though it was heated up, now that it cooled off, it may be a problem to reheat it. We'll discuss that more next time. So that's the word of cooking. Hatmana means to cover something completely. If it's exposed, that's not hatmana. It has to be completely covered on all four sides. Doing hatmana is definitely asr on Shabbos. Before Shabbos, sometimes mutter, sometimes asr. It depends how you're doing it. Shehiyah. Shehiyah is leaving the food on the fire, coming into Shabbos. You would think, what's the big deal? It's all before Shabbos, which is true. But we're nervous that you're going to stoke the coals on Shabbos. And therefore, it's also usher. So if you have a blech, you've taken care of that problem no matter what, because there's no coals. Even without a blech, it may be mutter. If it is fully cooked, it's mutter. If it's partially cooked, you can be lenient. It's a machlokas, you can be lenient on that. So shehiyah, though, the concept is leaving food on the fire, coming in. Chazara, it was already on the fire. I took it off to eat, I put it back. Not always mutter. In order to make chazara mutter, you're going to have five requirements. Meet five requirements. Number one is shui. In order for chazara to be mutter, you're going to need five things. Number one is it is fully cooked. Number two, it's still hot if it's a liquid. Number three, that there is a blech, that the coals are covered. There's a blech on. Number four, that you had das to put it back, and number five, that you were still holding it the whole time. So to take something that was on the fire, taking it off, putting it back on, that's called chazara, only mutter if you have those five requirements. Fully cooked, still hot if it's a liquid, and blech in your hand, and you had das to do it. That's chazara. Nesina lechachila, what's the issue with nesina lechachila? Here's a new problem. Of course, let's say it's fully cooked. Can I take something which is fully cooked and put it straight into the fire? I have a dry piece of meat. I want to warm it up. Putting that straight on the fire on Shabbos, that's called Nesina Lechatchila. You would think it's mutter because there's no bishul happening. The problem is there's a new Issa D'Rabbanan called Mechzei Kimavashel. It looks like you're cooking. And that, therefore, it's not always mutter to do a Nesina Lechachila, to put things on. Okay, more detail we'll do next time. Just I wanted the terms to be familiar with us. We have Bishul, the Daraisa. We have Hatmana, insulating. We have Shehiyah, leaving it on before Shabbos. Chazara, it was on, putting it back on. And Nesina Lechachila, putting it on initially on Shabbos. Okay, I'll stop there with the Hilchas Bishul part. Next week, we're going to put some meat into all these halachas, but I want to familiarize everyone with the terms. All right. Any questions?
Or Rabbi, can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
I like heard that like if you put your hand on the chalent and you take it off and you keep your hand on it, for some reason that's mutter.
So
is that true?
That is one of the five requirements. And I'll explain. Right? If your chalent is not cooked or you have no blech, keeping your hand on it is not going to help you. Right? It will not help you because you're still doing an issa d'oraisa of cooking if it's not cooked. And therefore, it has to be for sure be fully cooked. The only time that what you were told works is it was fully cooked. There is a blech. It's still hot. You had that to put it on. Now, the fifth requirement is keep your hand on it. Now, what does keeping your hand on it? The ideal is not just that it's sitting on the countertop and I'm doing like a pinky touch on it, but the ideal is you're actually holding it, that if you were to let go, it would fall. That is the ideal. So therefore, it would be best to hold it in your hands, have someone else scoop it out, or second best, tilt it on the edge of the countertop, that it would fall if you were to let go. If both those options are not possible, so then you could do exactly what you said, which was just at least keep your hand on it. There is something to that. All right. And Alex asked earlier about the fridge light again, the fridge light with the house. It makes no difference whether it's your house or someone else's house. There is a problem of the light. It is only other house in your house. Yeah. So it would make no difference whether it's your house or someone else's house. Okay. Next week, we'll add on to the Hilchos Shabbos. I hope we have the structure clear. Now we'll move on to Parsha. This week's Parsha for the Americans is Parshas Shlach. So I want to speak out just two points on the Parsha. Point number one is like this. There is at the end of the, we'll talk about the Meraglim later. The end of the Parsha, it ends off with the Mitzvah Tzitzis. Now, for those that are married, you may be familiar that there is a minhag that the wife buys the talis for the husband. And if you're not married, I hope that you will soon become familiar with that minhag. And the minhag is that the wife buys the talis. Also, some have the minhag to fold their talis Matzi Shabbos in front of their wives right after Abdullah. So we see that the wives are involved, are included perhaps in the mitzvah tzitzis, which we don't find that, right? We don't find that by other mitzvahs, right? For those who just joined us, we're now starting Parsha Shlach. So there is this minhag of having women buy the talis for the men, see the men fold the talis. The question is, what's behind that minhag? Now, do women wear talisim? So like this, the women are allowed to do mitzvah seishesman gramas. And tzitzis is a mitzvah seishesman grama. They're allowed to do it. When it comes to tzitzis, the Rama says the women should not wear tzitzis because it's gaiva. We have a whole nother schmooze about it. For those that are familiar with women of the wall, they perhaps are showing us their gaiva, right? The Rama says the women should not wear tzitzis because it's gaiva, and therefore they don't wear it. There's a story that actually happened in Boston many years ago, where a group of feminists went over to the Rav of the city and asked if they could wear tzitzis. And he said he didn't want them wearing tzitzis because the Rama says that they shouldn't wear tzitzis. But he didn't want to send them away, no. So he said, listen, why don't you try and put on a four-corner garment without putting the strings on for a month and see what happens to you? Because tzitzis is a very Kaddish mitzvah. So now, the women went for a month. They put on this four-corner baguette, and they came back. They came back to the Rav and said, listen, it was such an uplifting experience for last month. We're wearing the tzitzis, that we're wearing the four-corner garment. We're ready for the strings. So he told them, if you felt uplifted over this last month, it shows that it has nothing to do with the mitzvah. It's on your head, because a four-corner baguette without the strings is zero mitzvah. That is where the mitzvah starts. You go ahead and put the strings on. So anyway, women, that was their case. They were not so pleased with the answer. But the bottom line is, women do not wear tzitzis. They're not supposed to wear tzitzis. However, as we started with, they're very much connected to their husband's mitzvah tzitzis. They buy the talis for them and the husband folds in front of them. What is going on? What is it with tzitzis? We don't find that by tefillin. We don't find that the woman should buy the pair of tefillin or a lulav or a sukkah. Like, we don't find a link. Now, again, it's a minhag. It's not a chiyuv. But what's a pshat in the minhag? That's first of all. Second of all, the Rambam says that you should never go Dalet Amos without Torah, without tefillin, and without tzitzis. He adds in tzitzis. The Gemara didn't say that. We see the Rambam is learning that tzitzis also is integral to the person, just like Torah and tefillin are. So I'll explain it with the Gemara. If there's anyone underage here, hang up. Anyway, there's a Gemara in Menachos, Daf Mem Dalid. I will not read the whole Gemara, but I'll speak it out. I did not make this up. If you want to get an article with pictures, you may. Menachos Daf Mem Dalid discusses there was a Bachar who was Zahir and Tzitzis. He was very makvid to always wear Tzitzis. And he was very makvid with his mitzvah Tzitzis. And he had a taiva. He heard about a Zayna who lived in a faraway land, and he was interested in purchasing her services. So he sent $400 or whatever it was in those days and made an appointment to meet up with this Zayna. The Gemara continues. The time came. He knocked on the door. The servant opened the door and said, okay, you're the one that paid $400? Yes, I am. Go in there. And there was an elaborate spread, bed after bed after bed. And he went up to the highest bed. It was the golden bed. And there she was, the Zayna herself, in her finest attire, or lack of. And he was about to indulge in a big avera. And all of a sudden, the four corners, the four strings of his tzitzis hit him in the face. Now, he had already taken them off, because that's what he did. Yet, they were there in the room with him, and they came and hit him in the face. He got hit in the face, he woke up, he ran down off all the seven beds, and she followed him. So what's up? Is there something wrong? Is there something wrong with me? And he said, no, you are the prettiest lady I've ever seen. There's absolutely nothing wrong with you. But what do I have? I have a mitzvah in the Torah. And the Gemara says, the Lashon is, Hashem commanded me a mitzvah tzitzis, and Hashem's going to pay me back for it, and boom. Anyway, she asked him, what's your name? Where do you learn? What city? He wasn't scared. He wrote down all the details. My name is Yankel. I learned in B'nai Brak in Punovich. Fine. She codes. She sells all of her goods, comes to the yeshiva. He went to the Rosh Yeshiva, whichever yeshiva was, and says, where's this boy? And I know. She said, I want to convert. He said, maybe you want to marry one of my Talmidim. And she said, absolutely. So showed the paper, told the story, and said, fine, you can convert. And they got married. And the Gemara tells this story that he was zeiche to separate himself from a big avera. So Hashem paid him back and gave him his avera in a mutter way. But the whole context of the Gemara, it all happened about through the mitzvah tzitzis. So perhaps we see that the mitzvah tzitzis add a certain kedusha to a person and a protection to the person. And maybe that's why the Rambam said you should never go without tzitzis, to have that protection. Also we see that maybe this is a source of the minhag, why the wife would want to buy the tzitzis for the husband to keep her husband straight and narrow, to not do any other extracurricular activities, perhaps. Anyway, so that is just a concept of tzitzis, how it does add kedusha to the person, how the woman's role is not necessarily wearing it, but buying it, seeing him fold the talis. And that is with the mitzvah tzitzis. Now, I'll end off, which is one last thing with the Meraglim. We have by the Meraglim, the Pasuk says that they were traveling and they saw that there were giants. There were giants in the land. And they felt intimidated. And they felt like grasshoppers. The Pasuk says that they felt like grasshoppers in the eyes of these giants. Shui, if you're writing this is Vart number 2 in the Parsha. Anyway, so Vart number 2 is, he looked up, Meraglim looked up, and they felt like grasshoppers. So now, the Pasuk could have ended there. The Pasuk could have ended right there and just told us, okay, look, they felt like grasshoppers. But the Pasuk goes on. And what's the Pasuk say? V'chein hayinu be'einehem. And so were we in their eyes. Meaning, the Torah didn't just end that they felt like grasshoppers. It's reporting what they said. They said, and we were grasshoppers in their eyes. So the question is, why is that relevant? Okay, fine. Rashi says they heard, overheard the giants talking. But why do I care that they thought that you were grasshoppers? It's all about me, how I feel. I feel that I'm a grasshopper. I look up there, I feel intimidated. Why did the Torah have to add on, and so were we in their eyes? They looked at us like grasshoppers. So I heard that this perhaps, besides the Avera of the Meraglim, that they spoke Lashon Hara, and they went against Hashem's will, But there may have been a character flaw. The Meraglim may have had this character flaw of being too concerned in what other people think about you. And that's what they did. What do they say? We look like grasshoppers in their eyes. Why should you care? Why does that matter? It's one thing how you feel. I got that. You feel like a grasshopper? Okay, be connected to your feelings and deal with them. However, to say that, oh, and they thought we were grasshoppers, that's a character flaw. That's showing that you're concerned about what other people are thinking. And perhaps today everyone's busy with spending hours in the mirror getting fancy. Why getting fancy? You have to look good. You have to be nice. You have to have a nice car. Have a nice car. But do you really need that car? Do you really need that house? Do you really need that shirt? Why are you buying it? If you're buying it because of the how you're going to feel, it's one thing. If you're going to buy it because how are people going to look at me, that perhaps is tapping in to the chet of the Meraglim. That's a message we take with us from the Parsha, not to be so concerned about other people's thoughts of you. Now, obviously, you can't be a jerk. You have to act appropriately, and that much for sure. But we're saying that it shouldn't bother you. Your actions shouldn't be dictated by the thoughts of other people. Your thoughts are important. The thoughts of other people are less. All right, we'll end with that. And then next week, same time, different Parsha, continuation of Hilchos Shabbos. Hope everyone has a wonderful Shabbos and a wonderful week.
Rebbe, is that story the only thing that's a connection between women and sisters?
No, I'm sure there are other connections. That was one of them.
Oh, I mean, I feel like it's a kind of like a weak connection. It's not.
This is Yoni. It's like the Gemara tells that story, and it's a fascinating story.
What's the Gemara trying to prove with that story, though? That women should buy their husband.
How did sisters protected him? How did sisters protected him? That he was careful. Mrs. protected him.
Okay, I hear.
All right. So never take your tits off, Yoni.
Yeah, let me go.
Here we go. Night picture. Back on. All right.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good night.
Thank you so much, Rebbe. Have a good night.
Goldberg.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing this. I know it's early in the morning. It's unbelievable.
It's early in the morning. Enjoy panel, Alex.
Rebbe, check it out. Rebbe.
Yeah, let me see Shui, what you got? Look at that. Shui's our stenographer. Very nice, Shui. And wow. Hey, listen, you keep writing this down, and in 1 year, you'll be giving this year. I'll be on vacation in bed.
Maybe next year, Rebbe.
All right, Shui and Yoni, you keep writing. And hello, Jay.
Thanks,
all right, I'm out of
here. Yeah, that's like you showed up.
After his office.
Yo, L.
Bye-bye. Good Shabbos. I'm leaving. You guys can stay on if you want.
Yo, bye. We'll just bounce on the boys.
Wait.
Yeah, we have any
questions? All right, boys.
Hey, Rev Goldberg, real quick before you go. What was the thing about the chain that they saw themselves in the eyes of the grasshoppers? The idea was that they were concerned about the way they were being perceived.
Right, they were too concerned about how they were perceived. They felt like grasshoppers. That's true. They should feel connected. How they felt, they felt like grasshoppers. That's fine. But they act on, and that's how we were in their eyes. Why is that relevant? When telling over the story, just say that you felt like a grasshopper. That's fine. End it right there.
Right, but how did they know that what they were being perceived?